Hey, Misfits. I'm your host, Melinda. Thank you for joining Mystery Loves Company. Now hold on to your butts as we go on another mysterious adventure. Let's see what today has in store for us.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I'm Melinda.
I'm Hannah.
And today, we are going to talk about the Chop Chop House. It's also known as the Murder House.
Yes.
In Boise, Idaho. And we are going to let Miss Hannah take this one away for the first part of it. We've got two parts of this story. And one of them is the whole gist of what actually happened in the major circumstance. And then the other half is the aftermath. Mm-hmm. So, Miss Hannah, take it away.
No. Alrighty. I just want to start by saying I do repeat myself a lot just because there's so much that actually happens in one day. So I will repeat the day a lot. Mostly because when I was writing this down, I was like, what is going on? When did this happen? It's all in one day. So I will say the date a couple of times just so we're all on the same page. But I want to let y'all know that.
It was a busy day.
It was a busy day. It was a busy day for our three guys that were the main...
Three amigos.
Amigos. I don't even know if they were friends. That's the thing. With this, all of this, I'm like, I have no idea. Friends.
Acquaintances.
Business partners.
Bad dudes.
Yeah. Bad hombres.
Bad hombres. We'll go with that.
Ooh, yeah.
That's a good one.
Okay. So, yeah, three starts with Preston Amer, Darren Cox, and Daniel Rogers, who at the time, which is on June 30th, 1984, Daniel Rogers is the owner of the home, which is on Linden in Boise. It prefaces by saying that the three were involved with, like, illegal activities. They were into, like, drug dealing, arms dealing, all that, you know, under the table, organized crime stuff, you know, very savory.
Crime does not pay.
So they were about to find out. So on this day, on June 30th, 1984, during that day, they went on a heist, or I think just a deal, actually, not a heist. Look at me trying to sound all like I know what I'm talking about. Nope. just a regular, degular drug deal. just a typical day. I don't know what drug specifically, and an arms deal. But apparently it went really bad because some of the guns went missing. I don't know how. I don't know who lost them. I'm gathering that it might have been Preston Murr's fault because he was under a lot of heat from the other two. So they went missing. Darren and Daniel, or I guess Cox and Rogers. I thought that was so funny because it sounds like cops and robbers. Cox and Rogers.
It is pretty punny.
Yeah,
it's a little punny.
So Cox and Rogers were like, Preston, what are you doing? How do you mess that up? So they were like not on his side.
So are they thinking that he stole these guns?
He either stole it or he done goofed.
Or he just like misplaced firearms?
I didn't get a whole lot of details about how he messed it up. I just know that he messed it up and some of them went missing. So it's like, I don't know if they like obtained them and then lost them somehow.
Oh.
Or if they went to a location where they were supposed to be and not all of them were there. That seems more likely, but also, I don't know, it does not specify, and I looked at the court documents for all this, and it just says that there weren't as many as there should have been, for whatever reason.
Yeah, if I'm dealing arms and some of my guns go missing, I'm pissed.
Well, yeah, especially because if they're unmarked.
Right.
Too.
Like, I'm looking for someone, like, I'm looking for someone's head
at that point in time. Yeah, we do not play with that. So, yeah. So, the other two, Cox and Rogers, were like, okay, dude, what's going on? So, some point in the day, I think, after? See, that's the thing. The timeline, again, same day, June 30th, 1984. So, that deal happens. And then, also, the three of them end up at a funeral. I don't know whose funeral. I don't know when. Don't know why. But anyways,
that's random. It's
important because they go to the funeral, and then they all three had to leave early due to an altercation that they were involved in at the funeral.
All three of them were in an altercation.
Yes.
With like another member, or were they in an altercation with themselves?
Probably started with themselves, and then maybe someone that knows them probably got involved. Hmm. I don't know. There's not any information about that. That's why I'm like, timeline?
Okay.
Really up in the air. Cause? Involvement? But the one important the importance of this situation in the timeline is because the police were dispatched to the scene, and the other two were cited for disorderly conduct. So they already dinged in that day.
They're
on the radar. So later that evening, oh man, did I already miss a detail? So I did miss another detail. I'm so sorry. So I'm assuming in the middle of these two events, so failed arms deal and the altercation at the funeral, Murr got a call from an unknown person threatening his life.
Oh.
He has no idea who it was. So it's my assumption, just based on all of these, you know, disorderly activities, that the arms deal went bad, and then someone was like, I'm gonna kill you, because you literally just said that. You were like, heads are rolling.
Yeah.
That happens to me. So I'm assuming, yeah, he probably messed up some sort of details, and so...
So somebody, like, are the police thinking, or even in the court documents, are they thinking that it was somebody other than these two gentlemen that were so pissed off? Or yes. So they're thinking it's somebody else involved in the gun deal, it's probably.
That's what I'm assuming.
Okay.
That would make the most sense, but also doesn't specify, but I apologize because that is important before we continue. So, just to reiterate, failed arms deal.
Funeral.
In the middle of it, like, before they go to the funeral, Preston receives an unknown caller, a call from someone being like, I'm gonna kill you.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Wow. See, a lot going on in this day. So, we're still on June 30th.
It's a busy damn day.
So, yeah, they get disorderly conduct at the funeral. Yes, so, Murr called the police because he got the phone call. Because he was like, someone's going to kill me. I don't know who it is. So I'm assuming that he doesn't think that Cox and Rogers
are involved. Okay.
Or threatening him at this point.
So wait, keep your spot.
Yeah.
But my brain
is
just thinking, like, if he received this phone call before the funeral where this altercation broke out, like, maybe this altercation broke out because he told the guys that, hey, my life was just threatened on a phone call. And so then the guys are pissed off, like, oh my gosh, you really fucked up, man. Now we're all gonna get our shit. Like,
yeah, that totally could be. That could be
100%. Oh, that would make sense.
We're connecting the dots a little bit here. But yeah, no. So, there's more details about, like, so Murr doesn't really have like a place of residence, so he jumps around. He's staying at his sister's apartment with his girlfriend, and that's where he calls the police himself, being like, my life is being threatened. Someone needs to do something about that. So he left his girlfriend at his sister's apartment and went to the Circle K in Boise. Strange happening to put it at the Circle K. I messed that up. It's Circle K.
Yeah, we don't have many of those left, but we do still have a couple.
Love that. So he, at the Circle K, went to meet Cox and Rogers. I love that.
I do, too.
They arrived at the store. Murr used a paid phone, and he's holding a baseball bat, probably because he's really freaked out that someone's going to come kill him.
Well, yeah.
So...
I'd at least have, like, a shank.
Something. He clearly can't be trusted with firearms.
No. Anything other than a firearm.
I wouldn't lose stuff, too. I don't know about a gun.
I wouldn't lose guns, but, I mean, if it was a pen, I might lose a pen.
Yeah. No. He's having a rough day.
Right.
So, they're at the Circle K. It is, like, documented, cited by the public. He uses a payphone. Don't know who he called.
Okay.
So, meets Cox and Rogers at the Circle K, and so they get in their car, whose car? Rogers' car. And then they drove to Mer's sister's apartment where they're talking about the call and then also theorizing the whereabouts of the guns that had been stolen from Rogers.
Okay.
Stolen is really a loose term at this point because we still don't know how or why.
Right.
So they're literally about to go cruising looking for...
A suspicious vehicle?
No, they're looking for... an apartment that they think that the guns might.
So they have suspicions of who may have stolen, taken.
And called Mer.
Mm.
I'm gonna kill ya.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
They left the apartment and then they went to Roger's house, the 805 Linden house. And Roger's got his own gun because they were about to go, you know, have a, I'm sure, just a really level-headed
conversation, just gentle, gentle. Hey, man, did you happen to take my guns? You know what, bud? I did take your guns. Do you want them back? Sure, let's shake on it.
Let's hug it out. You know, that's exactly what they plan to do. So they go to the Linden house.
Yes.
Later that evening, so they were going to get the gun, and then they're also planning on, you know, hyping themselves up to go do this very level-headed conversation. So then the three of them start to argue. So that's why it makes me think that they're not friends, because they clearly cannot get along very well.
Right.
So they're on an altercation. Cox and Rogers got really violent towards Mer. Mer was getting really freaked out. And he was like, okay, it's 2-1 right now. Oh no.
Yeah.
And so Mer was trying to escape. And in doing so, of, like, trying to get out of the house, Roger shoots him in the shoulder.
And okay, so he's inside Roger's house.
Yes.
And
Roger has a gun. They went back to the house so he could get the gun so they could get more of the guns. But in doing so, they're having an argument because they just can't get it together.
Okay.
And then this is all, the heat is directed at Mer. Because, he, you know, messed up the deal in the beginning. So there's a lot of tension here.
Okay. So I'm playing this movie out in my head now.
There's an altercation. It's starting to get really, really heated. And then Preston is like, I think my life is in danger.
Okay.
Here.
So I'm going to beat feet
out of the house.
Yeah.
And then Roger shoots him in the shoulder. So a shot is fired in the house. Preston, is running out of the house, and he's knocking on all the neighbors' doors, being like, help me, help, oh my god, I've been shot, help, please help me. So, because he's got a gunshot wound in his shoulder, he's bleeding everywhere, and he's getting blood all on the porches of all the neighbors, all the front doors. Scott.
Anybody answer?
So, there was one neighbor that after banging on the door, please help me, help, call 911, call the police, whatever... guy, like, pokes his head out and sees Cox and Rogers dragging Mer back to their house. So he just sees that happen, and he's like, that's probably weird. So that neighbor ends up calling the police.
What did they
do? Oh, so he just reported suspicious activity, but no one seems super...
concerned
out by it. I think it's because no one heard the gunshot.
Well, so I'm slightly like my mind is bending a little bit right now because I know this area.
Yeah.
I know this area where this house is, and it's not slums. It's not
drove by it too. It's like really right.
It's a nice area, and you would think if somebody is pounding on your door late at night and bleeding profusely. Yeah. Like somebody would be willing to help. And I'm just finding it insanely crazy that nobody would open their door for this man. Because, I mean, really, that, I guess I don't know what that side of town was like in the 80s, because I was just a small child. Let's not talk about it. But I can't imagine it was super different than it is now. And I can't imagine somebody not answering their door if somebody is screaming and pounding on the door, unless they were like, they could see Cox and Rogers running and they're like, oh, we can't get involved. But at that point in time, why didn't they call the damn police?
I don't know.
That one man?
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
That is another reason why it's super weird, because he even called the police, and the first time that they were called, that this neighbor was like, I think there's something happening.
Yeah.
And the police were like, okay. And no one came. Like, no one was dispatched at that time.
Good old Boise Politi in the 80s, I guess.
Yes. Murr, shot in the shoulder.
Yes.
Bleeding out everywhere. And he's on the ground being dragged in back into the Linden home by Cox and Rogers. They're like, get back in here.
Mm.
So, once Cox and Rogers finally got him, Murr, inside, they fatally shoot him. One bullet to the brain. I think. I didn't see any more bullets fired. And then, why the house gets his name, because they dismembered Murr with a knife and an axe. And I saw multiple sources, but I heard 26 pieces, 13 pieces, however many pieces. But
either way, he ended up a jigsaw puzzle.
They chopped him. They really went at it.
Wow.
So that's how their first way of getting rid of the body. So they're like, okay, we got to chop him up. So they used a knife, and I don't know what.
So did they chop him up inside the house?
Yes. That's why there's evidence. Yes, we'll get into that later. So chop, chop. Then they put Murr into multiple different plastic bags, and then they drove to the Brownlee Reservoir and dump all the bags there, which was like, where, how, that's like 100 miles from Boise, right?
Brownlee Reservoir? Yeah.
No,
it's not that far from Boise. Okay.
That first mistake.
Let's see, 100 miles. So let's pretend you're going 65 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So that would put it at like, what, an hour and a half, almost 2 hours away, right?
Yeah.
Brownlee Reservoir is not 2 hours away. I would put it at like 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay. So that was.
But then again, I have a lead foot, so let's not tell anyone. Okay. I have a lead foot, so maybe it is 100.
But the thing is, too, is that it's like so dumb. It's like, go over state lines. It's the 80s. No one's going to find you.
Right.
What did you have to get back to? You know?
Right.
I don't know. I've never murdered anybody, so, like, I don't know. I'm not an expert here, but they were also, I'll get into that later. But, okay, so they drop him off at Brownlee Reservoir. So, while they're out doing that, the neighbor calls the police again, just because he's like,
nobody came.
I have a bad feeling about this. And so, because, you know, shot in the shoulder, bleeding out everywhere, the police finally come, and then they see all the blood all over the street, all over other people's houses, and so they're like, oh, okay. So then they, to contact the residents inside the Linden house, but after receiving a response, they get a search warrant and enter the house, while conducting a search of the home, the police find guns, money, I don't know how much, 13 pounds of marijuana.
Shit. It is over 100 miles away.
Okay.
Okay. Well, I have a lead foot.
That I saw, but also I was like,
I have a lead foot. I'm it's 100 miles to some people.
It's 45 minutes longer. Are you driving a freaking jet engine?
It's been a really long time since I've been there, so maybe.
God.
I mean,
right.
Well, don't tell anyone.
I want to go on a trip with you. Man, we are making great time. Whoop. Okay, so the police didn't find Cox or Rogers in the home, but they see, you know, all the illegal paraphernalia, and they're like, huh, doesn't really look like a law-abiding citizen lives here.
Right.
So they got a warrant. They found the stuff. So a week later, a fisherman finds the remains of Preston Murr.
And they were all in one bag?
No, they're in multiple
bags. Multiple bags. So
I don't know if they found all of them. That's something that I didn't
see. Well, they had to have. If they said how many pieces he was chopped into.
It's like, I've heard 13 pieces and I've heard 26. So it's like, I don't know how many pieces he was actually cut into. And I don't know how many bags that they actually used. And I don't know how many bags they actually found.
Well, and maybe the fishermen found a bag, and then when the police went out, they probably drug the reservoir and found the remaining bags, I would assume.
I'm assuming as well.
Okay, please continue. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
No, it's really fine. Just because it's like, those are some details that I just did not see. And, but yeah, so obviously bust it. Find all the stuff.
Bust it.
So, and then once they're like, okay, we're going to go back to the Linden House. The police. They're like, we're going back to the Linden House. On the way there, they find gloves and more plastic bags that were thrown into a dumpster behind a Meridian convenience store that had Preston's DNA on it.
So after Murr was discovered, the police were like, all right, going back to the Linden residence. And at some point, I guess I didn't, so many questions come up as I'm talking about this. The police somehow went to, they were in Meridian, and behind a convenience store, they found gloves and plastic bags that had Murr and Cox and Rogers' DNA on them in the dumpster.
Okay. So they drove from Boise to Brownlee Reservoir to drop off Preston.
Mm-hmm.
Then to Meridian, which is...
So if this is Boise, where is the reservoir? Is it like north? Is it west? East?
Is she joking?
I'm just trying to think of like the pattern that they did.
Seven.
Okay. You can look it up then. Because I don't know. I don't know. I don't live here.
Honestly, I can't tell you. I mean, I know McCall is north. I know that much. That's okay. What I know. They go from Boise 100 miles to Brownlee Reservoir.
Which, to me, it's like, we live one state away from the coast. Why don't you just finish the job? It's the 80s.
Right.
No one's going to fucking find you.
Right.
Why the reservoir?
Well, I mean, maybe these guys aren't firing on all cylinders.
Well, yeah.
But then they go to Meridian, which is a town that is anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes, depending on where you are in Meridian and where you are in Boise, right?
Yeah.
So go to Meridian and you drop off all this gear behind a convenience store,
mm-hmm.
and then go back to Boise. So the police, all this stuff is found in Meridian. They're like, these gloves could totally be in connection mm-hmm. to the disappearance of Preston. Like, why are they randomly gonna look behind a store in Meridian? Because these are two totally separate towns. Like, they're not going from store to store to store looking in dumpsters.
They must have, like, tried to ask convenience store workers like in the area, like, have you seen these gentlemen?
And maybe they did put out a thing on the news that was like, hey, if you see anything suspicious in your trash can,
In the warrant, they might have like checked the old odometer in their car. But then it's like they could have gone anywhere.
Well, but I would think that Meridian would be on the way back to Boise from Brownlee.
Oh, then that's probably why they looked there then.
But actually, I think Eagle would be on the way back to Boise from...
Because we know so geographically, we know exactly what we're talking about.
Uh-huh.
So,
I'm really good with a compass, I promise.
What a, you know, detective work. So they found the stuff, so they were able to book Cox and Rogers.
Yes.
Gig is up. So just to conclude, the ending, I think, is just funny because they both were so petty towards each other. Because Cox
and Rogers were petty towards each other?
Oh, yes. Oh, okay. Oh, yes. Oh, they were catty AF.
They did not buddy-buddy, let's hush up together.
Yeah, no. Okay. Cox literally, Rogers, threw him right under there. So Cox is like, I had nothing. I didn't do anything, officer. He made me do it. Blah, blah, blah. So he basically, spun the story saying that Rogers made him do it, was like, I'm going to kill this guy. Kills Murr, holds Cox at gunpoint, being like, you're going to help me. And so Cox was like, yeah, okay. I helped him clean up the body, but I didn't do it. So
when he says he helped him clean up the body, does that include chopping up the body? Or does that just throwing it in the bag and taking
there's
it
no
to
way that one person, well, I don't know, because there's messed up serial killers, but they don't seem like the
ever
type.
Ever seen Dexter? Yeah. One person could totally do it.
Yeah. But I'm doubtful that Rogers doesn't seem like the guy that's like, I'm going to do all this by myself. I don't think any of this.
He's lazy.
I don't think any of this was done by himself, but Cox is being a little bitch. So he's like, I didn't do it. So Cox only gets 6 years.
Oh.
As an accomplice because he pleaded guilty and was a little bitch. And yeah.
Only 6 years?
He only got 6 years. And Rogers, life. No parole.
I mean, I agree with that, but only 6 years for Cox?
Only.
Okay, so it must have been they made a deal with him to get him to talk and to get him to roll over on Rogers. It has to be something like that. I don't see how he would have only gotten 6 years for chopping up a body and throwing it in the Brownlee
restaurant. It's because he was only charged as an accomplice. He wasn't first degree with intent.
So because he didn't physically shoot him in the head.
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
6 years.
Say only six. That's a vacation.
How much does a wood chipper cost?
Oh, God. That's gotta be some cleanup though. Holy fuck. But yeah, gotta do it yourself. Don't trust anybody. No, but yeah, Rogers gets life. No parole, but kind of had that one coming.
Mm-hmm.
The thing, and I didn't get all into that because it's a bunch of legal jargon and my brain kind of goes dead while I'm reading that, but while Cox was indicted, or not Cox, sorry, Rogers, when he was indicted, he tried to appeal six times.
Oh.
Tried because for certain things, lack of evidence, this, that, the other.
I mean, it sounds to me like they had some pretty good evidence.
Exactly. And also they shut it down every time. So the last time I think he tried to appeal for parole in 2005 and was denied, and he hasn't made any claims since then. So I think he's okay, jig is up.
All right. So he's still locked away.
Yeah. So he got arrested for first degree murder on March 18th, 1988. So there's 4 years. Oh, God, and something I forgot to mention because I kind of blazed through all this, but another reason why Cox got off with a little slap of the hand. Rogers was unable to appear in court. He was unavailable. So Cox took that opportunity and just ran with it and was like, this guy did it.
I am sorry. He was unavailable.
I don't know what that means, but that's what it said. That's what it says. He was unavailable.
He was busy that day.
Yeah.
Sorry. Try again another day to try me for murder because I'm a little bit busy. Can we maybe try tomorrow?
Cox wasn't considered. Oh, no. Oh, I'm mixing this up. Shoot. Roger Charles was during Cox was considered unavailable and was not testifying.
I mean, either she way.
Some exemplary statements of the police investigation till the trial admit. Okay. Now I kind of understand why Rogers was like, are you kidding me?
Well, yeah. But I mean, either way though, I can't understand how it was like, I'm too busy to come to court today, so.
For murder.
For chopping a man up.
Too busy.
I have plans. I'm sorry.
I think unavailable means like someone died or, you know, he might have been in the hospital or something. Who knows? But I don't know what unavailable would mean in that circumstance. It's like, okay.
I don't know.
Well.
That's weird.
But I don't know where Cox is now. I didn't look into that.
He was released 6 years later? Like, did he only do his six-year sentence? Or?
Yeah, and, like, I'm sure he had some parole on top of that. But I'm sure he's just out there living life. Or not. Ew.
Let's look him up.
Yeah, we should. We'll do a follow-up. We'll look into that, because I sure didn't. I just left it as Rogers. You know, Rogers is still in prison. And
wonder if he stayed in Idaho. Because how old were they?
So, that's another thing. So, Murr was 21, and Cox and Rogers, I think, were in their early 30s.
So, if this was in the 80s, that would put them in their 60s now.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wait. No, that would put them in their 70s. We're not going to talk about my age and why I know that.
You know, it's a time and a number. You could have said any number and I would have been like, yeah, totally. They're 30. They're 35 now.
It's fine.
Oh, so old. But that's kind of something that really made me sad, because I also tried to find like a little bit of backstory on Preston Murr. And there's none. Just 21. He was born in California. Made it over to Boise somehow.
His family didn't say anything about him, or like.
I think he might have been a runaway.
At 21?
Well, he probably ran away much sooner than that.
Yeah.
And that's probably why he was in the life of crime.
Yeah. That makes.
And it doesn't pay.
That's so weird to hear about, like, in Boise in the 80s, though. Like.
Yeah.
Like, Idaho just wasn't. I mean, it's a little bit wonkier now than it was in the 80s, but it's just so
wild because you could get away with so much more back then. Obviously they didn't, and they weren't very smart about it, but
honestly,
yeah.
And they must not be campers, because you know what kind of forests we have up here?
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's like if you went far enough,
Brownlee Reservoir, where everybody fishes.
Yeah, that's why I was like, just go to Oregon. Yes. Go to the ocean. Mm-hmm. That's a done deal.
Wow.
Are you kidding me? But, so, should I summarize the events, or
yeah.
Am I just going to leave that?
Yeah, okay. No, go for it.
Because I feel like I, like, told some stuff out of order, and I do apologize about that. But, just for, like, just so we're all on the same page. So, this all happened June 30th, 1984. They do the drug arms deal. Goes bad. Preston gets the phone call. Someone saying, I'm going to kill you. And he's like, ooh, that sucks. The three of them go to the funeral. They fight about something. And then they get charged for disorderly conduct. Then later that night, they're going to go try to find where they think that the missing guns are, the stolen guns, whatever. Then that leads them to go back to Roger's house, the Linden residence, because he's going to get his gun before they go get more guns. Makes sense. And then that's where Preston gets shot in the shoulder. Then he freaks out, tries to call the neighbors, pound on the doors. Only one neighbor calls the cops. They're like, something seems off. And the cops are like, nah, it's probably fine. So, and then they literally drag him back into the house, Cox and Rogers. And then Roger shoots him with a gun.
That's a gun.
A gun. Shoots him in the head. And then they chop him up, put him in bags, and then put him in the Brownlee Reservoir. And then they dispose of all of their evidence in a town like 15 minutes away. And then that's how they get caught. And that's all she wrote. So that's the really short version, but I just want to make sure that I told everything in the correct order that time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. This story is insane to me.
It's well, insane. Yeah, just because I wanted to know the backstory behind it, because right. When we hear, I looked at a lot of what other people were saying, and they just talked about the murder specifically, but I'm like, why? Why did this all happen? Because, you know,
yeah,
like, they were living a life of crime, but they don't seem like
obviously are not really seasoned murderers.
Well, right. And we have no backstory on these guys. We don't know what type of personalities they had or what.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell if they were friends or not. It didn't sound like they were friends.
Right.
So.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So, I guess with that, we will dive on into
the spooky,
the Chop Chop house.
Thanks for joining, Misfits. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. After all, mystery loves company.